Good afternoon. My name is Daniel Nagin. Welcome to today's panel discussion about the future of payday lending in Virginia. I teach in the clinical program at the law school and am director of the Family Resource Clinic. And today's panel is sponsored by the Family Resource Clinic and also co-sponsored by the American Constitution Society for Law and Policy and the Federal Society. And I want to thank both of those student organizations for their support of today's event. I also want to give thanks to Cindy Derrick of the clinical program for her assistance in organizing the event as well. The plan for today is as follows. I'm going to make some opening remarks to, I hope, help frame the issues for our panel discussion. And then I'll turn it over to each panelist and give them about 15 minutes or so to address payday lending from their perspective. I may also pose some questions down the road, but certainly I want to make sure that towards the end of our discussion today that there's an opportunity for Q&A from the audience. Let me first introduce our panel. To my immediate left is James, or Jay Spear, of the Virginia Poverty Law Center. He is a longtime consumer rights advocate, is currently executive director of the Virginia Poverty Law Center. The Law Center engages in a wide variety of advocacy, including lobbying, training, and other efforts on legal issues affecting low-income Virginians. To Mr. Spear's left is Michelle Satterlin, an attorney and registered lobbyist with McCulley & Birch of Richmond. She represents a variety of clients before the General Assembly and other state agencies. Most importantly for our purposes today, Ms. Satterlin and her firm represent CheckSmart, which is an Ohio-based company with 18 payday lending locations here in Virginia. And then to Ms. Satterlin's left is Senator Cree Deeds. His district includes several counties in central Virginia and the cities of Charlottesville, Buena Vista, and Covington. Senator Deeds was the Democratic nominee for Virginia Attorney General in 2005. He was elected to the state Senate in 2001, and prior to that, he served for 10 years in the Virginia House of Delegates. I want to thank each of our panelists for agreeing to be here today and sharing their insights with us. I think the topic is particularly timely for several reasons. Anyone who drives or walks in Virginia will probably see somewhere a payday lending store. Here in Charlottesville, there are a number of outlets on Route 29. There are others closer into the center of the city, and their bright signs advertising payday loans can seem ubiquitous sometimes. As we will hear, some view payday loans as exploitative, as creating a cycle of debt and trapping people in a loan, if you will. And others view it as an important vehicle to help certain communities obtain credit where they might not have any other way to do so. And so part of our purpose here today is to dig deeper beyond these sort of different perspectives to understand the nuances of payday lending here in Virginia. I mentioned that I think that our discussion is timely, and I think there are four reasons why that is so. First, within the last few weeks, Congress passed legislation that regulates for the first time certain kinds of consumer transactions made to active duty service members, that is, of the armed forces. In particular, one of the covered transactions is payday loan. There is now a cap of 36% annual percentage rate, APR, on payday loans to active duty service members. This was an amendment to a defense spending bill and had bipartisan support. Republican Senator Jim Talent of Missouri and Democratic Senator Bill Nelson of Florida co-sponsored the amendment, and it was also supported, obviously, by the consumer rights advocacy community, but also by the Department of Defense itself, both of which argued that payday loans to active duty service members was harmful. The second reason I think our discussion is timely is this past February, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a case called Buckeye Check Cashing, issued, I think, what is the first opinion involving a consumer payday loan transaction. And the question in that case wasn't payday lending generally. It was a more narrow question regarding an arbitration clause in a payday lending loan agreement. But I think it helps reflect the fact that payday lending is a very rapidly growing industry, and its harms and benefits are something that's hotly contested within the courts, in legislatures, and in the media. Third, and I think this is quite interesting, we actually have some real hard data about payday loans in Virginia from the Virginia Corporation Commission. The commission collects data from payday lenders about the loans they make, and so we know a few things, one of which is that payday lending is growing very, very fast in Virginia. 2002 was the first year that payday loans were specifically authorized in Virginia, and in that year about 600,000 payday loans were made. In 2005, just 3 years later, there were 3.3 million payday loans made in Virginia. In 2002, $165 million were transacted through payday loans. In 2005, the number reaches over $1 billion in payday loans, and that's in Virginia alone. And today, there are about 750 payday lending outlets in Virginia. And then fourth and finally, and perhaps most importantly for our discussion today, I think the topic is timely because there are two bills pending before the General Assembly regarding payday loans. The first would repeal the 2002 Payday Loan Act. It would essentially make unlawful and prohibit payday loans, at least as they are made today. And the second would amend the 2002 Payday Loan Act in certain respects, which we'll discuss in a moment. Let me step back just now and talk a little bit about the national perspective on payday loans so that we can put the Virginia story into context. I don't want to go into great detail here about how we got to this particular point, but let me just say the following. The topic of the issue of regulating payday loans is largely now a matter for the states, with the exception of the armed forces provision that I mentioned a moment ago. And so there are frequent battles in the states about what form regulation should take regarding payday loans. About 10 states prohibit payday lending in one way or another. Some states have no particular laws governing payday loans specifically, and so payday loans may be governed by that state's Small Loan Act. And then still other states, and this might be the largest category of states, authorize payday loans specifically, but regulate them to some degree. And Virginia falls into this last category. I keep on saying the word payday loan, and everyone sees the sign, but it's not clear that we all know what a payday loan is and how it works. So let me talk about a payday loan. Certain fundamentals may differ from state to state and depending on the transaction, so I'm going to give you sort of a very general version of a payday loan in Virginia, but I also want to acknowledge that my description may not be particularly nuanced, and I'm sure that our panel may tease out some of the intricacies in a way that I won't address in my opening remarks. Let's say I need and want $300, and I don't have $300. And I might want or need $300 to make a car repair, to pay my rent, to pay my utility bill, or something else. I can go to a payday lending store and walk in and say, "Hi, I'd like $300, please." Under Virginia law, the maximum amount of a payday loan is $500. I will be asked whether I have a bank account. Generally speaking, no bank account, no payday loan, because as we will see, part of getting a payday loan involves writing a check. The payday lending store may do some background check information about me, but generally speaking, it will not involve a credit check, which is a critical element in the speed of these transactions. The length of the loan under Virginia law can be as short as 7 days or as long as 30 days. The typical or average loan is about 14 days. In my situation, recall that I said I wanted $300. Under Virginia law, the most the payday lender can charge me for interest is $15 for every $100 loaned. So what that means is that if I want $300, the cost of the loan to me total is going to be $345. That is $15 for every $100 loaned. So what happens next? I write a check to the payday lending store. I make it out to them. It's on my bank account. And in my situation that I've just described, I will make it out for $345. They will hold on to that check. I will also sign a loan agreement that describes the terms of my loan, the amount, and a lot of other information that I won't go into now, but also the deadline for me to repay, 14 days. So what happens next? Well, I get $300. I walk out of that store, and it's usually a relatively fast process with $300, either cash or a check made out to me. I now have 14 days to give back to this store $345. And I can do that in one of two ways. I can either come back with $345 in cash or money orders or some other form, or at the end of 14 days, the payday lending store will simply cash my check. Remember the check that I wrote for $345. So if I repay it, or the check is cashed, and I have sufficient funds in my bank account, the loan is over. Well, what happens if I default? I don't come back with cash of $345 within the 2 weeks, or my check is deposited at the end of 14 days and bounces. What happens then? Well, a few things. One is that I am, of course, liable in a civil proceeding or otherwise for the amount of the loan, plus 6% interest per year on the principal of the loan, plus up to $25 for any bounced check fee that my bank may impose. One important point, however, is that I cannot, under the law, be threatened with or prosecuted criminally for having written what some might view as a bad check. The APR, the annual percentage rate, on my $14 hypothetical loan works out to be about 391%. We may talk in a little bit about whether that's an accurate reflection of the true cost of the loan. We know a few things from the data that the state collects about payday loans here in Virginia. One is they're very, very popular. As I mentioned earlier, lots of people take out payday loans. But we also know that lots of people take out payday loans a lot. That is, about 90,000 people in 2005, according to the state, took out more than 13 payday loans from the very same lender. So that doesn't even capture people who may take out more than one payday loan from multiple lenders. So we know it's popular, but it's also used by individuals a lot, by the same individual a lot. So let me wrap up here just by describing the two pieces of legislation now before the General Assembly that may be taken up during the upcoming session this winter. One is House Bill 619. It will repeal the Payday Loan Act in Virginia. It will, for all intents and purposes, eliminate or end payday lending in Virginia, probably, although that may be something we can discuss. The other bill, House Bill 1621, would not repeal the Payday Loan Act. Rather, it would reform it or amend it in certain respects. And I won't go into all of the details. I'll just highlight three important changes that House Bill 1621 describes. The first is it would create a real-time payday loan database in Virginia such that each payday lending outlet would have to report the identity of the borrower and the terms of the loan to the state, and that information would be maintained in a database that the lenders would have real-time access to. Secondly, lenders would be prohibited from making loans to any prospective borrower who already has three or more outstanding loans, as reflected in the database. And then third, lenders would also be prohibited from making any loan to someone who had terminated a payday loan anywhere within the prior 48 hours. So I hope in these brief opening remarks I've given a little bit of flavor of what a payday loan is, what the national picture looks like, what the state laws look like here in Virginia, and how they may be changing radically, perhaps, in the coming months, depending on what the General Assembly decides to do. With that introduction, let me stop and turn to Jay Spear and let him address these issues from his perspective.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. That was a nice overview of what's going on with the payday loans. As I was coming up here today, I always have to think back to my days in Charlottesville. I went to undergraduate here, and I did not get into the law school, even though I applied. But I'm not bitter about that. I think it's one of these things, though, that actually ended up turning out for the better for me, because I went to William & Mary Law School and met Professor John Levy, who got me going interested in the public interest area. And so I've been at Legal Aid in the Poverty Law Center now for almost 20 years. So sometimes good things can come out of bad. And, you know, it's the same thing with payday lending. And let me say one good thing about payday lending, followed up by all the very bad things I'm going to say. And that is, I think the one good effect that it has had, it has forced the public and our legislators to look at the fact that we have so many folks out there who cannot reach the American dream. How many people out there are working full-time, work and cannot make it from paycheck to paycheck, and we've got a big problem with that. And by the way, coming in February, there's going to be a movie coming out called Maxed Out. And Professor Warren from the Harvard Law School is prominent in that. It's a documentary about how many folks are in debt in this country and what a big problem it is. And I would advise you if you get a chance, to see that movie. I was last here as a speaker over 10 years ago. Ed Whalen and I were asked to speak to, I think it must have been something put on by the placement office about what it was like to work at Legal Aid. And at that time, Ed was the director of the Charlottesville Legal Aid. And Ed proceeded to tell the students that came that the third year of law school was a complete waste of time and you really shouldn't even go to class. And I don't know why that's why it's been 10 years since I've been invited back. But let me fill in a few things about what Dan said about payday lending. Before 2002, we did have payday lending in Virginia. And what was happening was there were national banks and there were out-of-state banks that were partnering with in-state businesses doing payday lending. And nobody knows exactly how many payday lenders there were, but we think there were maybe 150, 200, mostly grouped around military bases in the Tidewater area, because the payday lenders love the military and they target the military, as well as they target many other groups, including low-income and minority groups. And the payday lenders went to the General Assembly and they said, please regulate us. Because we're already doing this, you can't stop us because we're partnering with national banks, and so state law doesn't affect national banks, or we're partnering with state banks that are from other states, and therefore you can't stop us. Harvey Morgan, who is a delegate from the Gloucester area, patroned a bill called the Payday, and we now have the Payday Loan Act. And by the way, Harvey Morgan now is the biggest opponent of payday lending. He feels like we made an extremely big mistake, and he has been quoted in the media many times saying that he supports Delegate O'Bannon's bill now to repeal the Payday Loan Act. But really, what the payday lenders, the code for please regulate us, what they really mean by that is authorize what we're already doing and give us cover for when the feds are going to crack down on the banks coming from out of state and doing what they were doing. And sure enough, they were exactly right. The feds have cracked down. The national banks are no longer doing this. The out-of-state banks have been stopped pretty much by the FDIC from doing this. So that is no longer an issue. The out-of-state banks have been put out of this business. The payday lenders knew that was going to happen, and that's why they wanted the Payday Loan Act to pass. So we've gone from now maybe 150, 200 of these places to over 800. To put this in perspective, for every McDonald's, there's at least two payday lenders in Virginia. Now, that's a lot of payday lenders. And it's because it's an incredibly profitable business. You'll hear some. Dan mentioned the interest rate. Virginia law caps the interest rate at 780%. So if you make a loan at 781%, that's actually illegal in Virginia. Most loans, that would be what the interest rate would be on a one-week loan. Most loans are for 2 weeks because they're called payday loans because it's a loan until your next payday. And most folks get paid every 2 weeks. Now, they do make also a lot of one-month loans. Who gets income monthly? Social Security recipients. Yes, they do loan to folks on Social Security and SSI. A 2 week loan in Virginia is capped at 390%. One thing that the payday lenders told the General Assembly is that regulate this and then competition will drive down these rates, right? They're capped at 390%. The Bureau of Financial Institutions report shows us that the average amount charged is 383%. And the only reason it's not 390 is because there are several of these one-month loans where the interest rate's lower. So every single payday lender is charging the maximum. So competition never works in this kind of a business. The interest rate is very important. The payday lenders try to, it's interesting, in October we had a hearing before the House Commerce and Labor Committee, and the folks that testified for the payday lenders would never say the interest rate. They were well trained. They always say $15 per hundred. They will never say the interest rate. I'll be interested to hear if Michelle, if she probably will, something will happen, maybe her hair will catch on fire or something, she tries to say the interest rate because they're scared to death. I'm just kidding. They're scared to death to say the interest rate because they don't want the public to know what they're charging folks. So they're always talking about $15 per hundred. And that's also, by the way, what they will tell all the customers when they come into the business. How much do you charge? $15 per hundred. And believe me, I've talked to as many as maybe 40, 50 people who have gotten payday loans, and they all confirm this. Now, by law, under the Federal Truth in Lending Act, they must disclose what the annual percentage rate of the loan is. And so when you actually sign the paperwork, it will be on the paperwork. But, of course, all you've heard is $15 per hundred. And what do you know what they tell folks that ask about that interest rate, the very few people that ask? They say, well, that's if you got the loan for a year. You're only going to have it for 2 weeks. So that doesn't really apply in your situation. But as bad as the interest rate is, that is not the worst part about payday lending. The worst part about payday lending is what we refer to as the debt trap. Payday loans are specifically designed to trap the borrower into repeat loans. And this is why, and I will talk a little bit about this later, although I may be running out of time, but this is why reforms of this industry will never work. The business is set up to churn people, to get folks to get one loan after another after another. Ask yourself, why do you have to pay the whole thing back in 2 weeks? The reason is because they know the person can't pay the whole thing back. So in Virginia, actually the law is that, and I've been fighting this battle now for 6 years. For 2 years, we kept the Payday Loans Act from passing. And then when it finally passed, a lot of the legislators listened to all our complaints about the debt trap, and what they put into the law is that you cannot renew or roll over a payday loan, thinking they were protecting consumers. But the problem is that the payday lenders already knew exactly how they were going to get around this with the so-called touch-and-go loans. And what happens is you write that check for $345. When 2 weeks is up, you cash your paycheck. You bring them $345 in cash, and they say, Mr. Spear, would you like another loan? And you think, the borrower at this point is starting to get an inkling of what has happened to them, realizes, now that I've paid off this loan, I don't have enough money to pay my rent, or I don't have money to buy groceries for my family. Yes, of course I have to get another loan. And so the cycle begins. And the facts don't lie. The Bureau of Financial Institutions collects statistics from the payday lenders about how many loans they're making. What it shows is if you do a simple mathematical equation of you take the number of loans divided by the number of borrowers, you come up with almost 8 loans per borrower. But it's even worse than that, as Dan alluded to, because most people go to more than one payday lender. In fact, most of the folks that call me have been to as many as 5, 10, even 15 different payday lenders, and they have 15 outstanding loans. And when they get paid, they spend almost half the day riding around paying off the different payday lenders. And if you calculate, what we did is we took a study called the Georgetown study, which the payday lenders paid for, a research study, that showed the average person goes to, I think, 1.7 payday lenders. And if you take that number, you come up with almost 13 loans per person in Virginia. That's an average, 13 loans. That's more than one a month. That's the average person. So everybody's getting caught up in this debt trap. The payday lenders will tell the legislators and the public, we can't help it if some folks misuse our product. The truth is, they're using the product exactly as it is intended, and everybody's doing it. There are some folks who get one or two loans and get out. But by far, the statistics show that almost everyone gets loan after loan after loan. The what we have to remember about the Payday Loan Act is that when we passed that law, we put into the code a provision that gave them, the payday lenders, very specific exemptions from the current law. The big one we've already talked about, small loans are capped at 36% in Virginia. So we gave them this big exemption to that. The other thing that we need to be aware of, though, and what Dan talked about, was the bad checks. Every time somebody gets a payday loan, they are essentially writing a bad check. They're writing a check knowing they don't have the funds in the bank, which is a crime in Virginia for anybody else, but not when you make a payday loan. They got themselves a specific exemption. These reforms that are going to be suggested by I think the payday lenders realize that the legislators are up in arms and are going to do something about payday lending, and so their strategy is to try to pass some sort of reform that doesn't do anything. And these reforms have been tried in many other states, Oklahoma, Illinois, Florida, and they don't work. You may hear some conversation about databases where they will collect information and not make a loan to somebody. And I think Delegate Oder's bill you talked about says you can't have more than three loans at the same time, and so they'll have to check a database to make sure you don't get that fourth loan. Payday lenders are already doing this. They have this thing called Teletrack. They already know when you come in you've got three, four, five loans. But they go on and loan to you anyway. So I think my time is just about up, I can talk forever about this stuff. So feel free to ask lots of questions. One big thing I will have to say, I'm sure Michelle is going to say this, where do these people go if they can't get a loan from the payday lender, right? That's the big thing they always talk about. Well, according to the trade association that represents payday lenders, only 6% of the people that get payday loans have no other alternative. 6%. They create their own demand because by being on every street corner, advertising on the radio and the TV. What other alternatives are there for folks who need money in an emergency, as Dan talked about? The same thing people have been doing for who knows how many years. They work out something with the person you owe money to. You borrow money from your family. You get a cash advance from your employer. You borrow from your church. You borrow from you get money from social services. Now, what do you think happens to folks after they've gotten 5, 6, 7, 10, 15 payday loans? They can't get out. They call me. They say, how do I get out of the payday loan? Where do you think those folks go? How do they get out of the payday loan? They go to the same thing I just told you about. Their neighbors, their friends, their employer, their church, except now they owe 4, 5, 6 times as much as they borrowed in the first place.
My sense is that Ms. Satterlin may have a slightly different perspective. Please.
Thank you. My name again, Michelle Satterlin, and I'm here on behalf of CheckSmart. Naturally, we have a very different view of the payday advance service industry. Sure. I think that's a big point that Jay brings up, and he's right, I am going to bring that up. Where do people go? Throughout this conversation, Jay did not give any realistic alternatives for people. The payday lending industry in Virginia works because the time we are in society, we need a financial product like this. It isn't for everyone. We acknowledge that. But there are hundreds of financial products out there. And every time you make a financial decision, you look at what the products are that fit your individual needs. This is one product. Jay's attack on the payday lending industry scapegoats one small segment of the financial services industry. There are other things out there that aren't being discussed, and I think that's really unfair to just focus on one segment of the industry. Now, that industry is successful, as he said, and has been growing because people need it. He talks about going to your family, going to your friends, going to your church. I think at one time that would have worked, but this is 2006. I am not going to go to my employer. That for most people anyway, if you're in any sort of corporation, that would be a really bad career move. Getting a cash advance is just something you don't do. I don't go to my family for money. I want to keep things personal. I remember when I was in college, I found myself mismanaging my funds. I got myself into a phone bill that I couldn't pay. And there I was, I found out, and I don't even actually remember how much the phone bill was. It was something like $80, somewhere around there. Phone got shut off. Called the phone company, and I find out I'm going to have a $100 reconnect fee. I had to live for months without a phone. Now, I was young, you know, healthy. There were no emergencies. I had no children. But that's a pretty significant thing to happen in my life. And then I had to save up this $100 just to get, in addition to the $80, to get the phone reconnected. If a payday loan had been available to me, that makes, on my personal individual financial matters at that time in my life, that makes absolute sense. $15 versus having my phone cut off and having to pay an additional $100 to have that reconnected. That's not a smart move. When I hear Jay talk, it's as if he's saying people who find themselves in financial hardship are not very smart. That's the message I get. They're not very smart. They can't control their money. Let's control their money for them. Let's repeal this choice that they have to keep their finances personal, to avoid having to go to their families and friends. None of us want to do that. That's embarrassing. This is a personal matter. We're adults. The people who get these loans, they have jobs, they have checking accounts. They're adults. They're wanting to keep this very private. We can't take that away from people. And I guess it's so offensive to me because there is this vast majority of people out there who are using the product appropriately. And we acknowledge that there are people who use it inappropriately, but they're using other financial products inappropriately too. Credit cards, their checking accounts, you know. And there is a segment of society that for whatever reason, whether it's financial illiteracy or they're just willfulness, not thinking about how to manage money, they're going to use the product inappropriately. But that's across the board. And we can't, because there is this small minority of people who don't use it appropriately, punish those people who need this service and use it appropriately. Now, I'll bring up 391% or 81%. It is $15 per 100. And we were talking before, I'm going to bring this up. Senator Deeds said something, and I think this is so true. When you get a, it's 12 o'clock at night and you've got a craving for whatever, a candy bar. You're going to go to 7-Eleven. That's really convenient. It's just you can get in your car. You're there in 2 minutes. And buy this candy bar that costs $2. Where if you went to Sam's Club, which is 20 miles out of town, you're going to get that same candy bar for 50 cents. There's a convenience factor here. And people are paying for that convenience. They're paying for the convenience to remain, to keep it personal. I don't think that we can take that choice away from people. This bill that would repeal the Payday Lending Act, what Jay didn't bring up are all the other impacts. If that were to happen, think about the hundreds of people that are employed by payday lenders. What happens to their jobs? You know, there's that whole issue. There's vendors. There's the leases. You know, this isn't, and the people who actually need those payday loans. This is going to have a huge impact on Virginia if that were to happen. And no one's talking about those issues. No one's bringing up the people who are employed. They would lose their jobs. These are careers they have. My sense is that is such a strong bill. I can't imagine that that would ever happen. In 2002, we're still in a very early stage of this business. And I don't know, you're probably too young, but when the web first hit, what was that, like 96, when it really started picking up, and from 96 to 2000, everyone was jumping on the web. You know, you were going to have this business, everyone was going to make their riches on the web. And then it kind of crashed. And those businesses that, you know, had solid business plans and were reputable, they continued to flourish. We're early in the stage of payday lending. Yeah, it's people are starting these businesses, those that provide good customer services, those that have quality product, they'll continue. I think there'll be an evening out based on market demand. To say that we're going after low-income people and choosing the military, no, we're placing stores where we anticipate market need. And it's smart business decisions. Every for-profit business makes these kind of decisions. With the database bill, I think that is incredibly harmful too. Again, it goes back, I'm personally offended. It again says, you're not smart enough to manage your own money, let's manage it for you. It has this big brother connotation that says, you're an adult, but you still can't manage your money. It's completely discriminatory. It's choosing one segment of the industry. This is not a good bill. I think it also would be completely ineffective. I think what I understand from Jay is he's concerned about the inappropriate use of financial products. And having this database, I don't see how that would solve that segment of society that inappropriately uses financial products. How would it solve that? There's still, so this little segment, we know that they've got 3 payday loans. They're still going to go to the internet and get loans. That's not going to track that. They're still going to go over their limit on credit cards and get those fees. They're still going to bounce checks. If that's the goal, this is completely ineffective at protecting people from their own mismanagement of funds. And, you know, last year, during the legislative session in 2006, we wanted to work together to find solutions. If this is the issue, people don't know how to manage their money, let's talk about that. That's the problem. We wanted to include financial literacy components in the bill. We wanted, you know, we had payment plans. We had all sorts of things, but it seems to be this side wants nothing. There's no compromising, and I think there's no such thing as an absolutist. And we have to talk about, there is a huge need in this country for money like this. There are no other viable alternatives. Credit unions, I know that you've mentioned credit unions in the past. They're starting to have short-term loans. But those loans, again, a credit union is a non-profit organization. They don't have to make money, and they're acknowledging that they're not making money on these. Additionally, you have to be with the credit union typically for 6 months. So that still does not, when you have your car break down today, you need money today. You don't need it 6 months from now. So how does that solve that issue? There are no viable alternatives being presented, and there is a market need. So we're a product that serves that market.
Okay. My name is Cree Deeds, and I'll just back up a little bit and talk about the process and then give you some of my thoughts on the way the process worked on this particular issue. The General Assembly of Virginia is, both the House and the Senate is split up into subject matter jurisdiction committees. I've been in the Senate. I was elected in 2001. The committees I'm on are agriculture, conservation, natural resources, rehabilitation, social services, transportation, and privileges and elections. The only way that I'm ever subject to this kind of discussion in a General Assembly session in Virginia generally, you know, at least the way things used to operate, we were 60-day sessions and 46-day sessions. Very short sessions, 3,000 bills, and a huge budget you got to balance. The only way that with those committees that I'm ever subject to this kind of discussion is if a lobbyist is in my office or I read it in the newspaper. I'm not on the committees. When I was in the House of Delegates, I spent 8 years on the committee that's the precursor to what's now Commerce and Labor. And we were joking about that a little bit before. I always called it the best Fed committee in the House because it was, you know, there were plenty of steak dinners from that committee. I looked at that committee you know, the committee sits up on a dais, and there's like 15, 20 feet of carpet between the dais and the gallery, and all the money in Virginia is in that audience. The people you all are going to be representing in a couple of years are out in that audience. It's a job of a legislator to kind of think about the people that aren't in the audience and to try to make sure that whatever you do serves everybody, not just those that can afford lobbyists. When this legislation was introduced in 2002, the bill had been in the General Assembly before that for a year or two, and what the evidence was pretty clear that it was already taking place, that payday loans were already taking place. We had no control over federal banks. We had no regulatory scheme that could touch what was going on. And it was necessary, I thought, and a lot of people thought, that we put in place something to structure what was there. What, you know, you've heard two very competent, very capable people tell you about the pros and cons of payday loans. What is clear is there is a market, and you can see there's the way this business has grown. There's a market for short-term loans. That studies have shown that the people that are taking advantage of these loans or borrowing money are mostly young, lower middle class. I think the average loan is 2 weeks. That's money to keep the lights on or keep the telephone connected or pay the rent or buy groceries. It says something to me that here we are, the richest country in the world in 2006, and we've got families that are struggling like that. But we don't live in the fantasy world. We don't stand on a hill and say this is what ought to be. This is the real world. These are people that there's a need out there, and these loans are filling that need. And I did make the joke beforehand that it's like the 7-Eleven of the financial institution business. They're placed so they can conveniently service the people that are their target customers. But it's clear to me also that things have gone a little awry. That just doesn't make sense to me that at the federal level they've said you can't essentially loan to military families, and that's another problem we've got. We've never paid our military personnel adequately for the work they do, and we've got a problem that we have to address at the federal level. But families who are just as bad off are still going to be able to take advantage of these loans. It seems to me that we have to find a place, and I'm not sure where it is, if we are going to continue to allow this industry to exist. And I'm not certain that there are alternative sources of cheap credit or credit at all for people that buy into this market. I'm not certain that there are other sources. I've not seen anything that says that just 6% of the people don't have other sources. But if we are going to continue to allow this industry to exist in Virginia, we're going to have to find a way that we can make sure that it's profitable, so that it can exist, but that it doesn't take advantage of people. We used to have usury laws that were effective in this state. I think there was a time, probably within the lifetimes of maybe two or three people in this room, when nobody could get more than 6% interest on a loan in Virginia. Now for the small loans it's 36%, and for these guys it's what, 780% on an annual basis. So as a legislator, you know, looking at this thing, especially one who's not on the committee, who's not subject to the debates, and in the Senate's a very different place than the House. I was in the House for 10 years, and I remember arguments in the House, and that's a different place now than it used to be too. But we would argue and debate at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. We'd still be up arguing about different things. Probably didn't make a lot of sense to do that. But in the Senate, we don't have much debate at all. In the Senate, the committees pretty much do all the work, and when things get to the floor, you know what the votes are going to be, and you go through the motions of making the votes. I think that you have to find a place with all legislation where you're doing meeting the needs of all the people, as many of the people as possible. As a legislator, in normally a 46 or 60 day session, I'm making decisions on about 3,000 bills on the basis of the best information that's available. On a bill like this, I might have Jay and Michelle might come in and spend 2 or 3 minutes apiece. And that's basically all the time you have making their case. And I'll say, yeah, and I'll get on to the next one. And try to go through what they leave me. It's clear to me we've got to do something in this arena. And I'm not certain. I think that these two bills that are out here, I don't think that there's much hope of that, Jay, of the one bill that repeals the act. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that, you know, as I told you, these bills are before the best Fed committee in the House. And these kind of bills don't, the bills that repeal an act like this aren't, I don't think are going to pass. The other bill that imposes a more strict regulatory scheme, I don't know. I think that as popular opinion wells up about this issue, and it is welling up, people are going to be under more pressure to pass something. Now, will they pass something that really does something? As Jay pointed out a few minutes ago, it's not unheard of for things to pass in Richmond or in Washington or in any other legislative body that sounds wonderful, but it doesn't do diddly squat. So is an effective reform measure going to pass? I don't know. I don't have great confidence in that, but I think that as time goes on, as pressure wells up from the public, something will pass. You know, the problem is that, and the reason you have to kind of walk a fine line is that the market exists. You know, this industry's grown from what 600,000 loans to 3.3 million loans in 4 years' time. Who was filling the market of providing those short-term loans to lower middle income class people before this industry was regulated in Virginia? I'm not certain. What else has developed in the market to fill this gap if all of a sudden we pass legislation to kick the payday industry out of Virginia? What about these people that are trying to borrow money to keep their lights on or to pay their bills? I mean, what else are we doing as a society to fill that gap, to fill that need? You know, that's a tough choice, and something that I as a legislator have to figure out. You know, before you're going to completely shut down an industry, you need to know that whatever need that industry is filling, whatever need is going to be met, is going to be met.
Thank you, Senator. I think right now I'm going to give Jay and Michelle maybe a minute or so to address anything in particular that they'd like to from what they've said, and then we'll turn it over to you for a Q&A. So just, I guess, in the same order, Jay, if you want to just take a moment or so.
Okay. Well, first thing I want to do is give Senator Deeds a copy of the something from the Community Financial Services Association of America, which states that only 6% choose payday loans because there's no other alternative. And, you know, I hear this argument all the time that there's this market out there, and I've said almost jokingly, well, a lot of folks like to snort cocaine, but I don't see anybody trying to pass a bill to prop up the cocaine industry to make it profitable so folks can get more and more cocaine. I also would point out, by the way, that when a hurricane comes through town and closes down businesses and people set up shop on the sidewalk and start selling bottles of water for $20. There's a market for that, isn't there? Folks are paying $20 for that water. And the General Assembly has passed legislation called the Anti-Price Gouging Act to deal with that sort of thing. And that's what we have here. The payday lenders, you know, when I first started out in legal aid, my clients never got loans anywhere. Nobody talked about predatory lending. But somebody figured out there is a big business in exploiting folks who are in financial difficulties. And that's what the payday lenders have done. It's developed this product that exploits people who are in financially somewhat desperate situations and they are exploiting them, much like the man who sells the bottle of water for $20 after the hurricane. And so this discussion about whether there are alternatives, you first have to ignore the fact that they're exploiting the folks that are using the product. This idea that a few people are misusing this product, what about the numbers? Let's talk about the real numbers that you cannot dispute, that everybody is getting multiple loans, not just a few people. The vast majority of people are getting loan after loan. And it's because, don't forget, it's not, as I said before, the worst part about this is not the interest rate, it is the debt trap. And as I said, it is specifically designed. Remember, why do you have to pay the whole thing back in 2 weeks? Because they want you to not be able to pay it back, so that you have to get another loan and another one and another one. These are fully secured loans. They always talk about, one thing Michelle didn't mention was, usually they have this argument about, well, we have to charge these exorbitant rates because a lot of people default on these loans. Well, these people pay back their payday lender before they pay back anybody else. That's also another big problem. Why do you think a lot of businesses won't locate in strip malls? Why do you think the Norfolk City Council passed an ordinance trying to slow down the growth of payday loans? Because other businesses don't like it. Because once somebody gets sucked in for a payday loan, they pay them first and they don't pay their other bills, and it becomes very disruptive to the entire economy. And the reason is they effectively grab hold of your checking account. You realize after you've gotten into one of these loans that you had better keep paying it or getting new loans, or they're going to destroy your checking account. They're going to send that check through. Your check to your rent's going to bounce. Your check, your mortgage is going to bounce. You're going to bounce the check at the grocery store, and they probably will prosecute you for writing a bad check. And you're probably going to lose your checking account, and then you're going to be stuck going to the check cashers and other folks. So they are fully secured loans. The fact that the legislature has enabled this industry by giving them these exceptions to the bad check law and the usury law, and that's what's made it grow so much. In North Carolina, they passed a Payday Loan Act, and it sunsetted after, I think, 3 or 4 years. They had about 900 payday lenders in North Carolina. They now have basically none. Now, do you see people out on the street saying, please bring back the payday lenders, we have nowhere to go? Of course they don't. And where's the sudden, and the other thing the payday lenders will talk about as well, if you take this away, they'll go to the loan sharks and they'll go to the Internet. And where was this big loan shark business before this passed? They are creating their own demand. And they have created this wonderful business model that's wonderful for everybody, which is bad for everybody except for them. And this is not an industry where a few small players are going to shake out. These are multi-billion-dollar companies, most of them located out of state, that are sucking millions of dollars in fees out of Virginia. And some of these companies are traded on Wall Street. This is big business. So don't listen to that. This idea that this is some sort of big brotherism, and this is really where the debate's going to center on these reform bills around what the industry wants to do is talk about the borrowers and whether the borrowers are irresponsible. The bill last year had something that said the borrower has to sign something saying I have no other payday loans somewhere else. So they put people in the position of when they need to get that third or fourth loan, they're going to have to lie and say they don't have another loan. It's all focused on the borrowers. What we need to focus on is what are the lenders doing? If they can't make loans for 36% interest, then they ought not to be doing the business. They say we won't compromise. We have no problem with small loans for 36%, which I think is outrageous, by the way. I would never pay. Would you pay 36% interest on a loan? No. That's outrageous. That's way too high. But we are willing to compromise on that. The payday lenders will not compromise on anything, and that becomes, as the legislators quickly find out, they will not agree to anything, and they want to do business the same way because they want to follow this business model, which is to get somebody into a loan that they have to repeatedly renew or get a new one.
Thank you. Just want to correct a quick point. The majority of payday lender borrowers have incomes between $25,000 and $50,000. So that's not considered your typical low-income borrow. And also, the majority are over 45 years old. So it's neither a young, low-income person. That's not what the research reveals. Secondly, Jay says other businesses don't like it. They don't want to be near payday advance services. We anticipate our market needs. When a person's caught in an emergency situation, let's say they don't have money, their car's broken down. What do they need money for? They need money to go to the auto repair store. They need money for groceries. We put our retail outlets in locations where people need to shop and buy things. You don't see us near bars and taverns. And getting back, businesses do like us. If a person doesn't have money and they need their car fixed, so they go into the auto store and they write a check for the $100, that check bounces. That retailer is going to place a $25 fee on that person and have to deal with this bounced check. The bank is going to give additional $25 to $35 fee. So right there on that $100, that person has accrued $50 in fees, plus I know a lot of banks do $2 per day additional fees. Think about the interest rate on that. No one's talking about that. What about your overdraft protection? I don't know how many of you have it. Say you are overdrawn $20 on your bank. Some of those fees are like $30, goes up to 1,000%. Again, I have to go back and say, you're choosing to scapegoat one financial product out there in the market, and there's all of these products. I think people are choosing this one, again, because the people are embarrassed. No one wants to talk about their personal finances. So you think, oh, these people don't have a voice. Let's pick on them. That's the message I'm hearing. Again, we are not out to exploit people. It's exact opposite. We're there to give people the freedom to make their personal financial decisions in a confidential and anonymous manner. Payday lenders prevent people from having to go to their family and friends. And I know you feel that those are alternatives. Those are not realistic alternatives in this day and age. People don't do that. It's not the 1950s anymore. You can't go to the mom and pop store and get a line of credit. You need immediate cash. That's how it works in this society. That's why there is a market need. I want to address one other thing. We want our customers to be financially literate. We want them to understand how to manage their money. It doesn't behoove us if we have people who can't pay us back. That's not what we're looking for. And so to say that we're exploiting this group of people who, you know, we know they're going to have to keep returning and returning. In Virginia, the law is you can take out one loan, $500 max. If your car breaks down and you need to go get repairs and I just had my car repaired. It's like $900. I'm going to have to go to two lenders. I'm going to have to get two loans. So, again, to say, you know, they're going from lender to lender. Yes, the law only allows $500 maximum loans. Sometimes you have to go to a different lender. I think that's, I've covered all your points, but I just, you know, there are two sides to every story. You're law students. I want you to really look at this realistically. This is a for-profit business. It is in the business of making money. There's nothing wrong with that. All of you, most likely, at one time in your life, are going to work for a business, be in business. You're going to want to make money. That's the basis of this business. 36%, if that was a reasonable number, if the payday advance service could make money at that, don't you think that'd be already be done? You don't see banks offering these short-term loans at 36%. No one is doing that. You can't make money.